This is the Popmatic Podcast. It is February. That means that it's Oscar time. It is also African American History Month. I'm Brian.
I'm Bill.
Amanda's here too.
Clint is here in the booth.
I'm here.
If we feed him, he might speak.
I will just cut it out if I do.
I want to let the Academy know that nominating Denzel every couple years does not count as celebrating African American History Month.
Oh.
Okay, that doesn't count, right?
Zing.
Like, you're getting better, but you're just not quite there yet. Okay, so what we're going to do this month on the podcast is, one, not make fun of Crystal because I picked on her the last couple podcasts and she's not here. So that's number one. So we're going to be nice. Two,
she's not here to defend herself. She never defended herself when she was here.
Or you cut it out. That's the editing room floor.
No one knew.
But so what we're going to do is we're going to give you our Oscar picks. And because we're normal humans, maybe we didn't see all the movies, or maybe you're waiting for the library to get the movies before.
That's what I'm doing.
Before you see them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give you our picks, which are better than other people because we're culture geniuses, and we're at least culture savants in some way. And then we'll maybe suggest some other library materials that you could check out that are similar or relate, or instead, like, this Oscar nominee stinks. You should watch this movie. whatever along the way. So you're going to have all sorts of things to want to put holds on, and it'll be super duper great. And before we do that, I'm going to teach the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences a thing or two about how you celebrate African American History Month. So here at NPL, we're going to do
Anansi the Spider.
Name That African American.
Ellingtown, performed by the NPL Puppet Truck.
Yay, puppets! Black History's House's Freestyle Gallery.
A showing of The Express.
Storyteller Thandaway Shipra.
I'm thankful Brian got that one. Hip Hop with Anya Williams.
African and African American Crafts.
A showing of Ruby Bridges.
History of Hip Hop, presented by Total.
African American History Month Trivia Contest.
Ooh.
Researching Your African American Roots.
The March on Washington Revisited.
A showing of Aquila and the Bee, and I totally screwed up the order.
Hymnology in the Black Church.
A showing of Blindside.
A showing of Greased Lightning.
Nick Nixon and Friends Play the Blues.
A showing of Freedom Riders.
Game Haven, Michael Jackson, The Experience.
So there's a timeout right here.
Brian, time out.
I think that whoever is responsible for teen programming at Southeast thought of this, like, but to just, like, have an evening where you play the video game Michael Jackson, The Experience, and tie that into African American History Month is, like, such a cool idea. So, like, I'm sorry, I don't know who's doing teen programming at Southeast right now, but you're awesome. That is such a cool idea. I love that. That's, like, one of the coolest things on this list. Okay. So whose turn is it to go?
None.
I'll go for it.
History of Hip-Hop presented by Total.
I think we have that on there twice.
I was just saying, I said that earlier.
Rock on Rock Art, African Petroglyphs.
Malcolm X, Life, Faith, and Mission.
A showing of The Color Purple.
A Total Racism Workshop.
Finding Your African American Ancestors.
Racism in America, Reality or Illusion?
And so many more. Seriously, there are so many films, like, directed by African Americans or about the African American experience, showing, like, at all these branches. There's just so much stuff. I couldn't list them all. A lot of these programs that we listed will be happening at multiple branches, so there's probably one near your house. But one of the best ones, what we're going to be doing here at Maine, or one of the many things we'll be doing here at Maine, is
Greased Lightning, which will be Saturday, February 9th, 2013, at 2 p.m. Movies at Maine is proud to feature the legendary Richard Pryor in Greased Lightning, directed by Michael Schultz, also starring Beau Bridges and Pam Grier. Greased Lightning is based on the true story of Wendell Scott, the first black stock car racing driver to win the upper tier in NASCAR race.
That's awesome. So I was trying to figure out how to work this in and to our Oscar picks, and I didn't think of a way, but just a really great, like, just DVD pick for African American History Month that has this awesome local connection is Pariah by Dee Reese, and she's from Nashville, and then she had a career in marketing, and then she went on to make films. And I saw this one at the Belcourt when it first came out, and what it is, it's LGBT teen coming out story set in New York City. But one layer that's added to this story that makes it a little different is that it deals with class in the African-American community. So it kind of deals with her learning about these different lesbian communities and, like, the sort of working class lesbian communities and then the sort of upper class lesbian community. And it was a really interesting take on that, and is made by a film director who's right here from Nashville. So cool. Pariah by Dee Reese. All right, folks, it's the moment you've all been waiting for, even people in this room patiently waiting for me to start. Our Oscar picks and library picks. So for Best Picture, the nominees are Amour, Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Miserables, The Life of Pi, Lincoln, The Silver Linings Playbook, and Zero Dark Thirty. Bill, what you got?
I'm going with Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. You didn't see this movie yet. So
maybe that's why.
So, fess up.
I guess the question is, how many have you seen off of that list?
I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4. And I've got catching up to do, but they were just released during the Christmas rush, and I haven't been able to get to it.
I'm sure you watched Les Mis like 4 times.
I will go. Mm. Not 4 times, but I'll go. Well, I don't know if I like it that much. I'll go, but I don't know. I'm really looking forward to Zero Dark Thirty. It's a thriller, based on actual events. I really enjoyed Argo, too. If I did have to choose, it would be between Argo and Zero Dark Thirty.
So why are you picking Zero Dark Thirty if you haven't seen it yet?
Well, it's just, like I say, I've always enjoyed Catherine Bigelow's films. It's just, it looks like something I would really enjoy, political thriller, and just the topic seems to fascinate me.
So is that the person that, is that like Bill's pick who you want to win, or is that who you think's going to win?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay. So, Amanda, what you got?
I think I'm going to go with Django Unchained. I have not seen any of these. I will freely admit that right up front. I did read the book Life of Pi, and I've seen Les Mis on the stage like 84 times. So I was not going to either one of those two anyway. I think Argo would probably have been my second pick. I'm going to try to see these once they come to the library and are conveniently checkoutable by all our patrons. I mean, I've heard Lincoln is long, and Zero Dark Thirty seems a little bit more intense than what I would want to go for. So Django Unchained seemed like a nice Western.
Violent, brutal Western.
Yeah, but you know, it's Tarantino, you know.
I was going to say, it might be a little violent for you, but hey, that's cool.
I'm going to mix it up a little.
Excellent pick. So the only one that I've seen is Beasts of the Southern Wild, which sold out the Belcourt for a long, long time. It's really, really popular. I saw it there, and it was pretty good. I don't think it was as good as everybody said it was. It was very good. What were you thinking?
I was just looking at what? Bill.
I was really looking forward to it, and mm-hmm. I went to it open-minded, and I just thought afterwards, what's the big deal?
I read the description, and I thought that.
Yeah. I mean, it just seemed like they were just stretching out scenes that went on forever, and I thought, you know, get on with it. I'm an avid film goer, but it just didn't, as you say, tickle my fancy.
Well, it tickled my fancy. It just wasn't, like, really kind of mind-blowing a lot of the way other people thought it was. If it had a flaw, I think in some ways I think it idealized poverty a little bit. It's almost like, yeah, living in this flooded trailer is way better than living some other way. And, I mean, maybe there's some truth to that. But if you live in the flooded trailer for a while with crazy, dying, alcoholic father, you might...
I'm not going to trade.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm good.
Maybe you wouldn't trade. But just here's an alternative, right? While you're waiting for that one to come into the library, you could see Ballast, a film by Lance Hammer that came out a few years back. I also saw this film at the Bell Court. And it is about a family struggling with poverty and the death of a family member in the Mississippi Delta. And where everything about Beasts of the Southern Wild is fantastical and far-fetched, Ballast is like hyper-realist. I mean, it's like super real, like we're trying to make ends meet. We live in this little house. A family member has died. We have a youth that's at risk. Really good African-American History Month, too, though, you know, I'm ashamed to say that it was made by a white guy, but all the cast are all African-American. Got a lot of praise. I would say, just like Beasts of the Southern Wild, a really good film, not perfect. I mean, I think that some of the performances – Clint, can you remind me, did they use professional actors in Ballast?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I was going to say, my memory is that they didn't, and that's because – of some of the performances. But you'd have to watch it and decide for myself. Still, like, a really good related counterpoint to Beasts of the Southern Wild, Ballast.
And a lot of movies are not made about that kind of Mississippi sort of delta. It's,
oh, yeah, you know, it's, absolutely.
Ballast is a great movie. I'm with Brian on that.
Cool. I mean, yeah, awesome pick. Which, you know, I mean, I think Ballast is, like, just a little bit too real, where Beasts of the Southern Wild... kind of happy. If it can't, well, I mean, it's not, I mean, that's not a happy movie.
Happy relative to Brian Land.
Well, it's almost like, I mean, it's like a tragedy, but it's like in, it's almost like in, like, if you mixed like Ballast, Little Orphan Annie, and like Where the Wild Things Are, I think you'd have like Beasts of the Southern Wild. but you know, but Ballast is just real. It's just, you know, there's no magical creatures, so. Anyway, but before we go on to the next categories, I just kind of wanted to bring up this idea of, like, do the Oscars matter anymore?
I think they matter to the people involved with the Oscars.
Well, so do you mean the Academy, or do you mean the people, like, that get nominated?
I mean that little Hollywood clique that
okay.
lives out in Hollywood.
So matter, I mean, you have to, basically it's just an award ceremony. And, you know, it's just their choice. It's sort of like an industry award, just like who gets best plumbing, but it's just not as glamorous. But as far as does it matter, I would say yes, because it does bring attention to films that, you know, normally wouldn't get attention. Like, I don't know, you always have to bring money into it, but Zero Dark Thirty. Well, also, there's been a lot of controversy associated with this film, but also, it just opened this last week, and it was the top moneymaker, and I wondered, and it doesn't have a big-name cast in it. It has a lot of fine actors in it, but I wonder, you know, it had so much heat from the controversy and also all the Oscar nods that people are going out curious to see it.
See, what's interesting, though, is that at the Hurt Locker, which Catherine Bigelow won the Oscar for, and I think that was one of the Oscar winners that had the lowest box office ever. So it's kind of interesting.
But when did it come? I mean, did it come out before? I mean, because like Zero Dark Thirty had Oscar buzz before
Zero
it
Dark.
Opened.
That was, didn't it come out in the
summer?
Yeah, it came out.
So see, it came out way before the.
You know, the thing. Also, just speaking of this, I've talked to several patrons when Hurt Locker came out, and they were saying, well, I want to look at this because it won the Oscar for Best Picture. And they just wanted to, you know, look and see what it was. So it does bring attention to the films, to the public. But essentially, it's an industry award.
Okay, because I guess I ask, because one of the things in my head, now it's been established, this is my persona on the show, that I'm just curmudgeon. Like, I just could have worked on it under this assumption that the Hollywood machine doesn't make good movies. I mean, that's like my premise. Now, when the Hollywood machine does make a good movie, like, awesome. I mean, I'll praise it, but it's like my assumption going in that everything that's coming out is bad. And sometimes these other people get independent funding for movies, and Hollywood will pay to distribute them and then sometimes take credit for these films, even though they didn't want to pay to have them made in the first place. So sort of my alternative pick to this whole process was a book by David Denby, who's the film critic for Snooty East Coast Magazine that I won't mention. But so he just has a new book called Do the Movies Have a Future? And his he asked that question because this idea that Hollywood studios, like, refuse to make movies of artistic quality at all anymore, except for towards the end of the year, around Oscar time, they will distribute films made independently under their titles, but they won't actually pay money for them to be made. So if you agree with this premise, you could read this book. I don't know if it's true or not. Because in the same introduction, he disses nerdy cinephiles, which I think that, like, I don't know, man, I don't know. I don't know if you fall in this category, but I think Clint, myself, and Bill are into this. He has this, like, people that, you know, download old movies that are out of print and trade DVDs with one another and, like, obsessively watch movies all the time. He actually says that this isn't that type of cinephile, even though he likes people like that. He's really not writing for them, and that's not who he's concerned about. He's just talking about people that, like, go to the theater all the time. Like, those people just are not getting good movies anymore, and he blames Hollywood for that.
Well, I think anytime, too, you set out to make a finger quotes Oscar film, like, your focus is wrong. You should make a good film that happens to win an Oscar as opposed to a film you're trying to win an award with, because then it sounds contrived and then it gets bad and... Well, here we are.
And getting back, you know, the Hurt Locker, you know, that's not exactly – they went out and made a good movie mm-hmm. that just caught fire. Within, yeah. And Zero Dark Thirty, once again, its topic matter appeals to me but might not to a lot of other people.
Well, it must, because people are going to
see it. That's so. You know, you just never know. And a lot of people are wondering, will Zero Dark Thirty have success, because the Hurt Locker deals, once again, with similar type subject but didn't do that well at the box office. But – then again, people see the good movies eventually. I tend to be a little bit more optimistic that cream rises. I mean, I know it's a corporate mentality, but still.
I think with Zero Dark 32, what it's about, I mean, it's about, you know, how Osama bin Laden is found out, right? And if you think about No Easy Day by Mark Owen, that was a huge bestseller. And there have been a couple other books, too, that weren't written by, and this is the SEAL team that actually assassinated him, but just about how we tracked him down, like all bestsellers. So I just think that there is the obvious market there for this, where I think the Hurt Locker, that was about a war veteran with PTSD, like, I think it's not exactly happy stuff, right? Anyway, so one of the one studio that Denby says is, like, okay, that it still, like, actually puts money into artistically viable films is Sony Picture Classics. I find Sony Picture Classics annoying because their name is Sony Picture Classics, and it's like, you don't get to decide for yourself what's a classic and what's not. And, like, every Sony Picture Classics DVD that you get, there's trailers for other Sony Picture Classics, so it's just like every drama that they make is, like, now automatically a classic, so it's... I just think it's doubly annoying. So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of with you, Bill. Like, this, if you do good work, it usually will get found out, no matter what your budget is or, you know, what backing you have. So let's move on. Best actor in a leading role.
Well, I just think it's going to be hands down Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln. And it is an extraordinary performance. It is.
Okay.
I dig it.
I haven't seen any of these. I mean, the only one that I just would mention would, I mean, because my first thought is when you see Hugh Jackman as the lead in Les Mis, you're like, it's hard to believe, but then you have to think back that he did The Boy from Oz, and was, I think he actually won a Tony for it, which is the musical about, you know, Peter Allen and his life. I wish you have the soundtrack if you would care to check that out. So, I mean, that would be the reason that I would see Les Mis, would be to see... I mean, I like the people in it. Just the storyline gets heavy after 3 hours.
I feel that. So my pick for sure, Joaquin Phoenix for The Master. I think it's the only one that I saw. that being said, he totally deserves it. He is so good in this movie. This movie, too, The Master kind of... Since we've talked about it in the last podcast, but... Since then, I'm sort of back, I think, in the same headspace as Paul Thomas Anderson after he lost me for a while. But Phoenix's performance as the sort of, like, drunken, wild sailor who gets sucked in by a cult leader is really compelling. But related to this, before this movie came out, I wanted to see it because I actually thought it was a fictionalization of the relationship between rocket scientist and cult leader Jack Parsons. Real person, right? This guy invented rocket fuel, and he was like this occultist ritual magician, and L. Ron Hubbard, who was the founder of Scientology. So Parsons was this scientist cult leader, and Hubbard was an ex-sailor who came to like his compound. And eventually what Hubbard actually ends up doing is stealing a bunch of money, a yacht, and Parsons' wife and sailing around the globe. And then they hated each other after that. And then later Hubbard went on to found the Church of Scientology.
Because what a stand-up guy.
Hey, whatever. So I from the preview, you should never judge by the preview, right? What the movie is about. And that's actually not what it's about, right? It's more about the abstract relationship between the master and someone who's manipulated by a charismatic personality. I think that's really what it's about. But if you're interested in Jack Parsons, then that little tidbit I gave you there, he really did have an amazing, bizarre life. He eventually dies because he blows his own house up. And, of course, some say that he was messing around with rocket fuel because that's what he did. That was his job. And other people, of course, the occultists say, well, no, he summoned a demon, and the demon blew his house up. So if you
maybe
want,
with rocket fuel.
Maybe with rocket fuel. Who knows, right? If you want the two perspectives, the library has two books about Jack Parsons. And for the more occult perspectives, so like Jack Parsons, the ritual magician, if that's where your headspace is, we have Sex and Rockets, The Occult World of Jack Parsons by John Carter. Now, if you want, I think, probably a more academic, you know, middle-of-the-road biography of Jack Parsons, we have Strange Angel, The Otherworldly Life of Rocket Scientist John Whiteside Parsons by George Pendle. So I got to put in there, too, I really like Joaquin Phoenix because he pulled off that stunt where he actually convinced people that he was going to quit acting to do hip-hop music. And we own the movie, the documentary that him and Casey Affleck made about that. I'm Still Here. The library has copies of that. I haven't seen that. I don't want to see it because I knew it was a joke. But just the fact that he did that, I mean, I love. I said, I'm coming from this space where, like, I don't have a lot of respect for the Hollywood system. And the fact that he was willing to prank it, like, just totally prank the system so hard. Just really kind of makes my day. And I have friends who were totally convinced that he was for real about making a rap album. Like, and I'm just like, are you sure he's really doing that? Because I'm not really convinced, right? And then, of course, it wasn't. He was just kidding. And I love, too, that there's still this ambiguity around whether he was honest on Letterman or not, you know, about that. And it's even better that he actually is a talented actor who does serious work. I just admire that. I would probably pick him for best actor anyway because he did that. So, it's my best actor spiel. How about actress in a leading role?
I'm going to go with Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty.
You didn't see that yet.
You're just asking me.
There's a theme here, Bill. I'm seeing the theme.
Okay. It's cool. I dig it.
It's just she's done a lot of really – she's just come out of nowhere, done a lot of really good work. I still haven't seen the one she was nominated for last year, The Help. I just never got to it.
You should watch it. I've seen that one. It's
good. Yeah, but The Debt I felt she was excellent in. She also did another one she was in a film this summer that I even talked about on the podcast about the Moonshiners. I can't think of it.
Lawless.
The Lawless. And she was also in another film, Help Me Out, Clint, about a guy who's thinks having apocalyptic visions. It came out and she was his wife.
Michael Shannon.
Yeah, Michael Shannon. Go to Internet Movie Database. Well, anyway.
I know what movie you mean, but I can't remember.
She's done a lot of quality work.
She was also on an episode of Veronica Mars.
She was. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, interesting. Anyway.
It always comes back to Veronica Mars.
I try. Every podcast. I always try to get her in somewhere.
But she, very impressive actress.
So Bill's crushing on Jessica Chastain. What's there to win, even though he hasn't seen the movie? I'm crushing on someone, too, who I'll mention later.
I'm with Jessica Chastain.
But you didn't see it.
I know, but I can't vote for the chick that was in The Hunger Games.
Okay.
I mean, we've done this too early. I haven't seen the movie. You know, it's been kind of rough here. I would have seen a few, but the weather crap was this past weekend.
Well, we have this whole thing called work.
Work?
Oh, yeah.
They pay me a whole salary just to come in 1 hour once a month and do this podcast.
Nice. That's a good gig.
I know. It's a good gig. Oh, okay. So my pick is Kavenjine Wallace, who was the little girl in Beasts of the Southern Wild, because that's the only one I saw. But I'm going to throw out to Naomi Watts. And now, she was nominated for The Impossible, which I haven't seen, but she made her career by starring in what movie? Do you know?
Mulholland Drive.
Mulholland Drive by David Lynch, which a lot of people say was David Lynch's return to form. So the library has copies of that movie, too. Personally, as a big David Lynch fan, I'm not so big on Mulholland Drive. For me, it's like Lost Highway, but easier. Like Lost Highway with everything explained. That's how I feel about Mulholland Drive. But if you want to see Naomi Watts in an amazing performance while you're waiting for The Impossible to come in, you could check out Mulholland Drive.
Great scene with Chad Everett in that movie.
In Mulholland Drive?
Yes.
Is that the scene where they the audition? The
screen test, yeah.
Yeah, the screen test scene is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to try to explain what that scene's about?
No, I'll let you see it for yourself.
Well, that's the whole thing. I thought about that scene because if she doesn't pull off that scene, that whole scene is ruined and the movie's kind of ruined.
Uh-huh.
But she does pull it off. But it's one of those things that you cannot explain. So I'm not going to try to explain that scene. But it's a scene of a movie audition of an actress trying to get a role, and the script is bad. But I think the equivalent scene is the scene in Waking Life, that Richard Linklater movie that's animated, mm-hmm. where the one guy is sitting down with the one film critic, and he's like, well, what's cinema about? And he's like, well, it's about a holy moment. And he's like, well, what's a holy moment? Then they just sit there until eventually the guy's head changes color. He's like, that's a holy moment, right? That's what that scene with Naomi Watts and Mulholland Drive is about. Check it out. It's intense. Okay.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah, I know. If you haven't seen those movies, the last 10 minutes have been totally incomprehensible.
It's okay. I stopped listening 15 minutes ago. So,
best director. Bill, go.
Okay, best director. It hasn't even come to Nashville yet, but I'll go with Amor Michael Haneke. Why not?
Okay.
He's
That is coming to Nashville, though.
I know. Yeah. It's going to the Belcourt. Not that I've always liked his films, but he's done some interesting work in the past, and you can't say they're dull. So, why not Michael Haneke?
Okay.
Because Catherine Bigelow and Ben Affleck weren't nominated. That's another reason, which is strange. I can't pick them, who I was going to go for.
So, Amanda, what you got?
I only know two of these five guys, so I'm not going to pick Spielberg because he's Steven Spielberg. So I would pick Ang Lee. And, for those of you who don't know, he did Brokeback Mountain, and he's done a couple other ones I can't remember.
Yeah, The Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one you were thinking of, right?
that was right there.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Well, I just thought that with the, Brokeback kind of has that bittersweet quality to it, and I think that The Life of Pi, that I think he's a good match for that subject matter, even though I'll probably never see it, God willing. But I do think he'd be a good match.
So my pick, David O. Russell for Silver Linings Playbook, and I haven't seen this, but this is just based on past work. If you want a comedy, I Heart Huckabees is such a good movie, which also stars Naomi Watts. See how it all flows together here? See, there's a method to
it's
my
like
madness.
Kevin Bacon.
Method to my madness, yeah. So I Heart Huckabees is just a really funny movie. Shania Twain is in that, has a really funny role in there about warring nonprofit organizations is kind of what that's about. Really great. Also, when he was making that movie, he had a notorious Hollywood freakout with Lily Tomlin on the set, and then someone that was on the set leaked it onto YouTube. And any Hollywood freakout that you've ever seen is nothing compared to this. Like David O. Russell just becomes as violently irate as you can be with someone without attacking them to Lily Tomlin. And then he literally goes on to the set and destroys it. You know that gif where the guy in the office freaks out and like destroys the computer? Like he does that to his own set while screaming the whole time. Like he totally destroys the set. Irately, and like they still finished the movie. They got all kinds of critical acclaim. But so the best Hollywood freakout ever. That one, where Christian Bale's tailing off the guy.
Christian Bale.
FU lighting guy on the Terminator set. Nothing. Nothing compared to David O. Russell's freak out. It's like the best, 2 minutes of YouTube you could ever have. And then The Fighter, I love that movie. That was a seriously good movie. So I haven't seen Silver Linings Playbook yet, but
it's a good movie.
Past work for sure. Deserves it.
And don't forget Spanking the Monkey. We don't have that, but we used to have it on video.
We Three Kings.
Yeah. We Three Kings.
Yeah. He does different work, too.
That's a pretty big range.
Yeah. So what were the other categories we wanted to cover for sure?
Writing.
Yeah, best original screenplay.
Can I cover cinematography?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
You want to do
this
it now?
Is important to me.
Yeah, you can do it.
This is very important to me, yeah. Cinematography, because the best cinematographer in Hollywood, or I should say Britain, or working today, is Roger Deakins. And this year he is nominated for the 10th time for the James Bond film Skyfall. And I hope he wins. In my opinion, he should have won back in 2008 for the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And we have that one on DVD, and I highly recommend this title. The best way to sing this movie, because it's such a visual feast, is on the big screen. It's truly a visual treat. If you think you're just going to see a Western, you're wrong. It's a Western, but the best description of the movie was the one I read on Wikipedia. It's a psychoanalytical Western. It's about the dangers of celebrity and the paranoia it brings. Roger Deakins does a great job, and I hope he finally wins the Academy Award, because like he says, he's done all those great Coen Brothers, Shawshank Redemption, and the year 2008, he was also nominated twice for No Country for Old Men. And he still didn't win, even with him eliminating. I have passion about this one. That's the one I'm going to watch the Oscar for, cinematography, and I'll be heartbroken if Roger Deakins doesn't win.
That's the reason why the Oscars don't matter, because someone like Roger Deakins hasn't won one in 10 tries, and that's mind-boggling.
And his work is off the chart.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Did you see Anna Karenina? Anybody?
Yes, I did.
Heard that looked really cool. Better than Roger Deakins?
No. Oh, the fight scene in Skyfall, where it's against the skyline and it's the shadows, mm-hmm. and a gun flashes off, it's just killer. I mean, he should win the Oscar just for that scene.
Over the holidays, we were going to go see The Hobbit, and we were walking up to the theater. I was like, hey, we could go see Skyfall, and I was told no, I was going to see The Hobbit. So, are you listening? So, best original screenplay. We didn't see any of the movies. Do you want to pick one? Does that mean no?
I picked the Django Unchained because it's Tarantino, because that was going to be my movie.
It'd be witty, right?
And I can't pick Wes Anderson because I don't like Wes Anderson. So
Wes Anderson has lost me, too.
Moonrise. I tried. He got all the acclaim. I was bored in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay,
well,
dude.
Rushmore, I think, is a really great movie.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah, it's really good.
I did the submarine one and the train one.
Hey, all the ones that are bad are the ones that you've seen.
I didn't watch the right Wes Anderson.
My opinion.
Well, Zero Dark Thirty, of course.
Yeah,
I was waiting for that. Mark Voll.
Just to be predictable, I'm mad that Paul Thomas Anderson wasn't nominated for The Master, because what made this movie for me was the script. So he shoots a really beautiful movie, Mr. Anderson. But the script is what actually made this movie good. I think Bill has said before, like, are you still thinking about a movie later? I'm still thinking about The Master, and I think it's because the script was really, really good and complicated and layered and interesting.
Have you read the script? I know the script has been floating around. I was wondering if the script...
No.
Because it seems like a movie that started as something and then...
No,
I
haven't.
As the making of and the editing of, it became something else. I could be wrong.
I'm not. I'm not that hardcore.
It doesn't feel like a script that was written that way, I guess, or a movie that was written that way. If that makes any sense, I don't know.
I feel that.
Then I'll be glad to watch that movie over again when it comes out on video.
We're running out of time. What categories have we wanted to talk about? What do you want to say that we haven't said yet?
I do want to say this about a lot of people were hoping Skyfall would get a Best Picture nod, and that's the James Bond film. It didn't, but this does bring me to another spy film that I thought last year should have been nominated for Best Picture, and in my opinion, it should have won. It was Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, based on the novel by John Le Carré. Even though Gary Oldman was nominated as George Smiley, I think he should have won, too. This is not a spy movie in the James Bond tradition. It's a steely-eyed look at the brutal Cold War. And there seems to be a double agent in the British Secret Service, and George Smiley has to figure out who it is. The cast is outstanding. You've got not only Gary Oldman, Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, Mark Strong, John Hurt. And from what I've read, Gary Oldman is getting ready to play George Smiley again. They're going to make another movie, probably Smiley's People. I don't know which one. But it's a follow-up, and that's a sequel I'm actually really looking forward to. So that's just something I throw in.
Well, and to the other thing I'd like to mention, Skyfall didn't get nominated for Picture of the Year, but their song got nominated, which I know everybody's really concerned about, you know, the music when you talk about a movie.
James Bond, for sure.
That's for James Bond. Yeah, that's true. I follow the movies. And I want to mention the song is called Skyfall, sung by Adele, that chanteuse from England. And it is downloadable on Freego. We do have that. A couple others in that category. Suddenly from Les Mis got nominated. And when I first saw that, I was like, hey, guys, that's not new. But they went back to the original. The director went back to the original composers of the musical, said, hey, I need a new song for Hugh Jackman to sing. And so they came up with this Suddenly. I haven't heard it. It probably is what it is. But my favorite one, and the one that I hope wins, is called Everybody Needs a Friend from the movie Ted. And I never thought Ted would get an Oscar nomination, but they did, which is it's written by Seth MacFarlane, and it stars Mark Wahlberg and his imaginary teddy bear friend. And the song is actually me sung by Norah Jones. It's very much like the beginning of The Family Guy. It's that big production number-y, jazzy type thing. But it's just a catchy tune. And if you can't vote for an imaginary teddy bear friend, who can you vote for?
I feel that. And of course, it raises the question, too, should Oscars have a musical or comedy category or both? It seems like in the song category, they're willing to let comedy in sometimes. But
well, I think music helps make the movie. It helps give you that comedy.
Oh, I agree. And it's like David Putman, who won the Oscar for Best Picture for Chariots of Fire. He said, I don't know how many Oscars we would have won without Vangelis' music.
Yeah.
And he won it that year, too.
Exactly. Though that's not a funny movie at all.
But it had good music.
Crystal isn't here, but she wanted to make a list of all the adapted screenplay material. So Argo is partially based on The Master of Disguise by Antonio J. Mendez, a guy that helped the CIA do disguises. And he worked in the movie business too, right?
Yeah.
And so there's Master of Disguise by Antonio J. Mendez. The Beasts of the Southern Wild is based on a play by Lucy Alibar, Juicy and Delicious. The library doesn't own that, but you're sure you could interlibrary loan it. Life of Pi is based on the novel by the same name by Jan Martel. Lincoln is based on Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Who was here.
Who is our literary award winner one year. And like, in all seriousness, this is the most readable 1,000-page history book you ever read. It's like really good. It reads like a novel. It's like one of the most rewarding and pleasurable, like long, detailed history books you ever read. Like so pleasantly surprised. The Silver Linings Playbook is based on a novel of the same name by Matthew Quick.
Which we have.
Mm-hmm. If I was going to do my pick of those, I would definitely pick Lincoln by Tony Kushner just on past work. You know, he wrote Angels in America, the play and the miniseries. And
there's that one, too. I think when it won something.
Probably. It was on TV, so it probably wasn't nominated for an Oscar.
Emmy
but,
or whatever,
yeah, I'm sure it won some. But that is awesome. If you've never seen that, awesome movie about Mormons and AIDS and angels. Great. Great movie. It's a miniseries, actually. And I think, you know, back to this, bring it kind of back home a little bit, David Denby talks about how it's strange that the creativity that used to be in Hollywood studios is now actually on cable TV. So these things that reach mass audiences and still have, like, some pathos are actually being made for cable but not in theaters. And I think Angels in America is a good example of that. Totally, last call. We talked about Prometheus. It's nominated for Best Visual Effects.
Which it deserves.
Are we rooting for that? I'm totally rooting for that. Another little side note. The fake movie in Argo that they're pitching, to make it real, they actually used a movie that was going to be made but never to be made. It was the film adaption by Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny. So there was a guy who wanted to produce this movie, had the screenplay made, but then it never got made. So when they actually had to have a cover for the CIA to do this in real life, they used that script. Currently, the library has the playaway and can't get a print version, but we have it on playaway if you want Lords of Light by Roger Zelazny. I think I'm out of factoids.
Better end the podcast then.
Hooray for Hollywood.
Hey, you've been listening to the Pop-matic podcast. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Or what else could you do?
Well, you can go to Google or Yahoo and type in Nashville Public Library, and voila.
It's just on my computer when I turn it on. It's magic.
Okay, this is dead air. Don't put this on here. I need this.
Never say that.
Yeah, if you make your doubt audible, it guarantees it's going to stay in.